My mother is Polish, as well as Irish, Scottish, and British. And so I come from a very culturally diverse family, and so I've learned to revel in the gifts and treasures of both. And I have gotten very involved in my youth group. I'm the president of Eastern Washington and Idaho Synod for the Lutheran Youth Organization, and I was recently elected the National Youth Chair, the National Asian Youth Chair. And so I've done several projects, such as coordinating conventions, and I really feel a need to involve multicultural youth, because I feel that the ELCA is losing out on some of the gifts and resources they could be drawing upon. The first thing I'd like to talk about is a Lutheran youth organization, better known as a LYO. And this is the general structure of it. Down here is your congregation. And this has their own committees, their own boards, and it has a life of its own. And then above this is your cluster. And your cluster is probably about, anywhere from 7 to 9 to even 11 congregations, depending on how large your cluster is. And then within there's probably 7 to 9 clusters, and those make up a synod. And then the synod goes into the region. And the top is the LYO. And I just talked a little bit about this. Down here, you have your basic youth group. You have your weekly events, or your monthly events, or however it works. And I think this is probably the most important part of it, because if you don't have a strong base, then you can't have a strong LYO. And then above this is a cluster, and it's just, and again, it's at the lower level, and so you need a very strong congregation on cluster support, and so you will have a stronger synod and regional, and region. And then there's a synod and a region, and then the LYO. And the LYO is putting on a national convention. That's going to be in Atlanta, and it's called To Be Alive. And it's going to be on the dates, sometime in July, and it's approximately $225. And before this, there are two events called the Multicultural Youth Leadership Event and the Differently Abled Youth Leadership Event, Mile and Dale. And Mile is usually around $40, and so is Dale. And I like to focus upon these two right now. I went to Mile when I was going into my sophomore year, and it was probably one of the best conventions I've ever been to. It had people there from Guam and Puerto Rico and Alaska. They had a very, very strong Native American population. We had talent shows, and we had just a lot of international feeling in there. And we had a powwow, and it was a really great opportunity to go. And I feel bad because not a lot of people know about it. And it takes place usually about 3 or 4 days before the convention. But it's not...
What is it?
It's going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta. Yeah, they're expecting approximately 28,000 to 30,000 people there at the entire one. Probably around 700 for this one. And this one, they're hoping to get maybe about 50.
Is that the same time?
No, it's before.
No, I mean the...
Oh, yes, time. Yes. Yeah, Dan and Mile are at the same time, but they're at different locations. And, and Dale has a smaller group, probably around, I think last time they had like 20. For a national convention, that isn't a really high number. And so they're working very, very hard to try to include people of all diversities. And the Differently Abled is a very big emphasis for them also. And there are ways to encourage people to come. And It's all written down in this text. It's a Serendipity Youth Ministry Encyclopedia. And I'll just give you a short summary of what it talks about. It uses the idea of small groups to build youth groups. And everything can be based around a baseball diamond. And the small groups usually consist of 7 to 9 people, depending on your youth group. And you can adapt all of this to fit your youth group's capacities and expectations. And the first one is called History Giving. That's first base.
History Giving?
Yes, History Giving within the small group. And then the second one is called Affirmation. Is it working? Second one is called Affirmation. The third one is called Goal Setting. The fourth one is called Koinonia, which is the Greek word for friendship. And what you do in these small groups is you are broken down into small groups, and then you have probably an eight-week rotation where everyone learns about the people in their small group, and then after that eight-week period, they break up into different small groups. And so there is an eventual closeness and bonding of all the people in the youth group. And I think this would be a very effective way to learn about your youth group. But again, it won't work if you have like a very small youth group.
And we have a small youth group, but we could still do it once.
Oh, yes, yes.
So that they get to know each other mm-hmm. better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, you can just change it however you feel it needs to be changed to make the things of your youth group. And I'd like to give an example of each stage. And the first one is History Giving. And this is a typical example. It all has examples in here of the exercises that you can do to build small group bonding. And the first one is bumper stickers. And it said, if you could put 2 bumper stickers on your car, one on the front bumper and the other on the back bumper, what would you choose? One just for fun, but the other should be for something you believe in strongly. If your particular bumper sticker is not listed here, add it at the bottom. It has, this is just like the list. It has, I may be slow, but I'm ahead of you. One nuclear bomb can ruin your whole day. Shop till you drop. My other car is a Mercedes-Benz. Don't laugh, it's paid for. Save water, shower with a friend. Stop pollution, ride a horse. I finally got it all together, but I forgot where I put it.
I like that.
I'm already distressed. Keep America beautiful. Eat your beer cans. If you're out of work and hungry, eat an environmentalist. Don't bug me. I'm pedaling as fast as I can. Driver in love. Stops at all full moons. If you're rich, I'm single. Go ahead and hit me. I need the money. Have you hugged a musician today? If you don't like the way I'm driving, stay off the sidewalk. I can't be overdrawn. I still have checks. This is not an abandoned car. I'm the guy your mother warned you about. So you see, it is history giving because it, through this very light description, it does tell you something about yourself. And then the next one is affirmation. And I'll give you an example of that. It's called musical instruments. Think of the others in your small group as musical instruments in an orchestra or a band. Jot down the names of your group members next to the instruments that explain their personality or the contribution they have made to your group. Then ask one person to sit in silence while the others explain where they jotted down this person's name. Then let another person sit in silence while you affirm this person, etc. And then it just has a list of musical instruments like angelic harp, soft, gentle, one with heavenly sounds, and then like passionate castanet with Spanish fervor, stormy, wild, seductive, with rose in mouth. So it has a lot of examples here. And then this is deeper than this list because this is talking about what other people see in you. And then the next one is goal setting. And this is a fishing expedition for clues into the thing God might be calling you to do, or the career you would be happiest in. Take a few minutes to fill in this questionnaire and code your responses. Then get together with one person and let this person listen while you walk through your resume. Clues to my calling. 5 things I'm good at. 5 things that turn me on. 3 jobs I have enjoyed. 3 issues, causes that concern me. 1 dream that keeps recurring. So you see, you really are getting personal, and you're sharing that with the group. Then the last stage is koinonia, which I think is sort of like a resolution to all of this, because you're accepting people as who they are, and you're thinking of them as friends. And this one is called My Last Will and Testament. If you could give away some of your childhood possessions to the people in your small group, what would you want each person to have? And then it gives like a list right here. And then you can add different things if you want to. So this is a really good way because it breaks down prejudice and it breaks down preconceived notions of people. And you get to know the person a lot better than you probably would have if you were just in a normal youth group setting where they just sat around and ate pizza and watched movies. In the beginning of this, they have a lot of games that you can play, as well as in the history giving part. Like it has blind volleyball and ping pong football and broom hockey, just a lot of stuff. Okay, this is a really excellent book, and I recommend it.
Do they redo that book every few years or something?
No, like actually, I think this is only published once, and it was published during the Reagan era. Because I noticed it has a lot of Reagan. It has a lot of references to Reagan in here. I think it was published in 85. Uh-huh. And they haven't republished it yet, so.
Because I was wondering, you know, if you use those games, mm-hmm. how dated they get before you get kids to say, oh, we've done that before.
Oh, no, no. I've done a lot of groups, a lot of games, and mm-hmm. there's just a lot of new stuff in here for me. Mm-hmm. And there's probably about 100 games in here. Mm-hmm. So, and then in the back, there's some things that you could do with your small group, like a week-long camping trip, or just a lot of stuff in the back. This is a really good book. And another thing to encourage multicultural youth leadership is a thing called Evergreen Youth Television, and I strongly believe in this. And it usually takes place in July. It happens once a year, and it takes place for probably over 3 or 4 weeks. And the people there learn from experts in their field about producing videos, and so they become resource people to not only their congregations, but as well as their city and the region, and even Hawaii, because there's not very many of them around. And they usually will cease by application process, and they have about 40 seats. And the first time they had, this is like probably 3 years old, and the first time they had a really tough time filling 40. And the second time it probably had like 100 applicants, and now there's like 300. So it's really expanding because the LYO is seeing the products that they produce, and they're really impressed by them, and so they want them to go to that. And since it is getting so big, they are branching out. It has been in Tacoma, Washington at Pacific Lutheran University, but because it is getting so large, you're going to have 2 or 3 different locations, so more people can go to that. Oh, and I know that they do encourage strongly people from multicultural backgrounds or differently abled backgrounds to go and share their views and beliefs with them, because this is a very, very educational experience, and you learn a lot about yourself, but you also learn about people that you would have never probably met before and the lifestyles they come from. And so this is just a really great program.
How do they go about getting multicultural people for various events? Do they go to different churches, or do they, how do they do, go to schools, or how do they
Okay. What our synod has been trying to do is, I think, writing letters to each congregation, asking them for the names of the people who are from multicultural backgrounds. So I have on this right here. But we have on our board, our Lutheran Youth Organization board, we have a president, we have a vice president, a secretary, a treasurer, and then it's called a minority outreach representative. And the minority outreach representative is to try to encourage all these people, all the youth who are not in. And we've tried to have newsletters, just a lot of different things. Like at our conventions, we try to incorporate. I know we had a sign language person there, and we had handicap accessible things, and so we try, but the church is 98.6% white, and so they don't really feel like they need to expand to let people of other racial backgrounds in. And so I tried to have a MAC board on the static level. On the LIO level, well, see, at a convention for MILD, the Multicultural Youth Leadership, they have a board, and it's called MAC. And it's a Multicultural Advisory Committee to the LYO board. And I tried to set one up, because, see, there's one on the national level, but there wasn't one on the synodical level. And I thought, well, you know, that's not, something's not right, because they aren't coming. And so I thought it'd be great if we could have one, so it really would get done, and we could work at the closer level to the actual congregations. But it didn't work out because my board is, they don't really want to expand, and I tried, but didn't get anywhere. Well, I didn't really get anywhere. So, but this I think would be a really good method once you have them in, but the question is how to get them in. That's the real question. And all I can say is that you have to be willing to accept people as who they are. And I heard a statement, and it was very interesting. It said, I don't think of you as Hispanic, I think of you as a person. And if you think about it, that's like a really bad statement, because they are Hispanic and they really want to like share their cultures with them, but they just are just, that they're seen as colorless, as friends, two friends. So they do want to share their culture in their own way, I suppose. And then also at the cluster level, but one main way to get them in to your congregation is to invite them to the synodical and regional gatherings, because they are closer to home. And actually, my MAC board was going to have one person from each racial background, or main one, was going to have an African American, an Asian, a Hispanic, Native American, an Aleut, and then probably a differently abled person. And so we've kind of pushed it to say, no, why don't you come, because we're going to have this new board, but it never got through. And then another thing that I was going to do was that my minority outreach rep and I were going to plan a servant project, a servant convention on the regional level. And so, and it would encourage people from multicultural backgrounds to come there. And they would have an election for the MAC board on the synodical and regional level, but it never got off the ground either because of the Western States Convention. It just happened this past week in Montana. And also there's just a lot of lack of support for it.
What do you do about funding? I mean, it's you know, people of color generally just don't have the finances. Mm-hmm. What do you do about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have scholarships. We have scholarships for them to come, and they probably just don't know about it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the congregation has scholarships, Cluster has scholarships, all of these have scholarships. Like, I worked on the Synod and Regional Gathering, and we gave a lot of money out for scholarships. No, actually, we had a large pile collected for scholarships, but it just didn't get used because people didn't know about it. But at the same time, we really didn't want a lot of people to know about it because then they'd be scamming for it. So it was kind of made on a personal basis.
I wonder if you let the pastors of the congregations who have a multicultural congregation know that there are funds available.
Yeah, actually, they are supposed to know that, but it hasn't really been made public a lot. And not only for multicultural backgrounds, but also from different social economic levels. Because the ELCA is kind of a middle class church, and so there isn't a lot of people from the lower income levels. And like I said, you're missing out on a lot of gifts and talents if you don't include them, and you're missing out on a new vision, a new direction to go.
So the key seems to be to get the word out about the scholarship stuff to the people who need to know about it.
Definitely.
So what have they done to do that? Do you know anything?
Yeah, well, I believe that all the congregational pastors, the youth resource people, are supposed to be aware about it. And so, probably, we're having a new, we just had our convention in Yakima this Thanksgiving weekend, and the next Thanksgiving weekend is going to be at Portland for the regional, and the one after that is going to be in Moscow, Idaho, for the city, so it goes back every other year. But I know that we will probably write a short little form letter to the youth resource person in that church, telling them that there are scholarships available for people who need it, but they should use it with their own discretion, because we don't want it to be abused. In fact, the fee for all of these, the Synod, the Region, and the LYO events, already have extra money budgeted in there in your cost to go for scholarships. Probably I know that for the Synod, our last one, it cost $79, and probably $10 of that was for the scholarship money. Went directly to the scholarship fund. 5 to 10. And so, you know, we had 300 people there. And so think how much money we had for the people who could have gone, but they just didn't know about it. So that is the LYO's fault in a way, but it's also the congregation level too. Like, I had a youth pastor, our main pastor, he left us probably 2 years ago. Whenever he'd get stuff in the mail for the youth, because it was addressed to him rather than our youth director, who's also a pastor, he'd have it all on his desk and he'd just rip it up and throw it in the garbage can. And so this is happening too.
I don't know, that kind of distresses me. I know myself, I mean, I'm part of this African American Lutherans in the church, and there's 101 African American pastors, and about 80 of them have churches. You know, I could get you that list, and you could send it directly to, you know, those people. And I'm just talking African American. I don't know about Asian, you know, where that would be. But it seems like there ought to be a way. To
a lot of it is bureaucracy.
Oh yeah.
Can I say that word, bureaucracy? I was looking through this list. I've had it for quite some time now, and there is a large number of people who are from multicultural backgrounds, but they just aren't being contacted, and I don't know about it. Like, I know that at the Synod level, I think there's 119 congregations in the East Washington and Idaho Synod, and probably about 50 go to our conventions, if we're lucky. So, there is breakdown. There is breakdown, definitely. And one way that we've tried to develop and cure that problem is by contacting our cluster deans and saying, give us a list of all the youth friendly people, the youth resource person in your congregation.
And that's true, because some pastors are interested in youth, others are interested in elderly, others are interested in, you know, different things. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to kind of find the person that is interested in that area, and that's the person to send it to. It might not be the pastor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then that can sometimes change, you know.
Right.
Something else can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My next question is, what's going on at these conventions?
That's another thing.
Okay, they're even interesting for people. For people of color, do you have African American people or Asian people who are presenting and speaking and anything
yes.
of that?
Yes. Okay. At the LYO level, we do. Mm-hmm. We do. At the regional level, I'm trying to think. The last one I went to, I think we probably had one speaker. And then at our senate level, I've really tried to push this, but they don't really want to hear it. And
I depend on your senate too.
Yes.
You know, where you are, because we're in Western Illinois, and
They
just aren't. We have the socioeconomic differences, but there just aren't that many opportunities to interact with people of other color and races.
Well, in our city, there's like hardly any people. I mean, relatively speaking. But I've tried to have like an international, because like at our synod ones, we have a banquet. And I've tried to say, why don't we have like an international banquet?
That's a good idea.
And they're like, well, I don't think people will really go for that. Well, I think they probably would if they were given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Just like, I don't know if they'd have to dress, they probably won't like dress up, but just like have African, it's like an African flavor, or just a whole richness of diversity kind of a night. Mm-hmm. And I've tried really hard, but it's,
so do you feel like you're the only one trying?
I'm the only one in my synod who's trying for the youth group.
How big is your synod?
Eastern Washington and Idaho. Mm-hmm. And there's like one congregation in Wyoming. Yeah, I feel like I'm the only one on the youth level who's doing it. Mm-hmm. And then I know that I heard from my old youth pastor, who happened to be African American, He went to our synod council meeting, the synod assembly, which happens every other year, and the alternate year is a festival. Mm-hmm. He said that, you know how the ELCA has in their constitution that they have to have 10% of the people have to on the boards and have to be a multicultural background? Mm-hmm. They were trying to alleviate that to make it less, like maybe 3-5%.
Are there a lot of, I would think in that area there would be quite a few multicultural people in congregations.
Well, it's not Western.
Eastern has a large number of Hispanics. A large number of Hispanics because of the agricultural land and jobs. Mm-hmm. But they're not really involved with the Lutheran Church.
Yeah, so that's a problem. How do you get them into the church?
And actually a lot of them aren't necessarily Catholic, or aren't necessarily Mormon, but they don't really have a precise denomination that they believe and that they belong to, but just that they're not really feeling like they're getting the chance to be invited in. And another thing, at our conventions, especially like at this level, at these two levels of reading and the synod level, they're very, very white. They're very, very white. Like at the LYO, I know that they really try to involve people from different backgrounds, because they have the MAC advisory committee, and they have I forget what it's called, but it's a Dale. A few people from the Dale convention are elected as reps to this. And there really isn't, you know, because, like I said, I tried, because I knew that it wasn't getting down to where it was really wasn't making a difference. So, yeah.
Your youth pastor was African American,
mm-hmm.
and he's the one that went to Taiwan?
Yes.
Okay, I know him.
Pastor Ray.
Yeah.
Steve Ray.
Yeah, okay. I know him, and one of the reasons he went to Taiwan, because this stuff is driving him crazy.
Yeah.
That stuff has been going on for years. Because I grew up I was Missouri Synod, but we were the only African-American Lutheran church in the Kansas district. And we had a real strong youth group, and we would go to conventions and things, and we were always the only people of color there. Always. And it's hard to get that, and there's a lot of misinformation and no information being passed. And
yes.
It's really.
And you know what was kind of scary is that I've heard that our synod out of Region 1, and Region 1 is most advanced of all the LIO, I heard our synod was the most youth friendly. And you know, when they're trying to do this to exclude people, not really exclude, but just not to include them.
That's exclusion.
It's maybe to make it easier for the congregations to go by the regulations. Mm-hmm.
Our synod assembly, I went this summer, and they were saying, well, we couldn't quite meet the quota because we tried and tried and couldn't find anybody to fill that. It had to be a woman. It was supposed to be a woman, I think, and they ended up having to nominate a man because
women, we don't have a lot of different colors, but they will pick the ones that are of different color and are women just because they fit that description.
how much
they really know about the job they're getting.
And it goes both ways. A lot of people don't like that. I mean, people who are like women and like say Asian or Hispanic don't like that because they know that they are being chosen because of that.
And people remind them of it. All the time.
Yeah.
People remind them of it all the time that you're here not because you're qualified, but because you're female and you're Asian, mm-hmm. or you're female and you're Hispanic and that sort of thing. So it's not an easy ride once you are chosen for that.
Mm-hmm. Sure not.
Well, I know that like on my board, there was two Asians on there. It was Christian Kress and I, who were on the board together. And we're both, she's Korean and I'm half Japanese. And she was actually chosen for the Asian female rep on the MAC board, but she had to resign because of personal differences. And so 2 out of 5 people were Asian. So that's, let me see, that's 40%. So that's pretty good, I guess. But now there's just me, so that's 20%. Well, that's pretty good still, but. But another thing that really bothers me is we have a male-female ratio that we have to go by.
Yeah.
And I don't like that because all of our board, except for one person, is, no, our girls, our females. And so we have now members at large, and they are chosen for 1 year, actually appointed by our synod, LYO, to respect with the geographical area and their gender. So because you can't really guarantee who's going to be elected for the position. I mean, because of like what happens, I ran against probably 2 guys and I won. And then I know that at almost every single position, a lot of guys are running. Like for one, I think it was like for minority outreach rep, there was like 10 or 12 people running and a large number of them were boys. But a girl is happening to be chosen. So you just can't guarantee who's going to win. Mm-hmm. And so that really makes me kind of angry too to have these quotas like male, female. But
I think they're doing that to try to get more equality of color.
Well, you know, I went.
But sometimes it backfires.
Yeah, well, see, I went to the Council of Synod Youth Presidents in Chicago 2 years ago and then again this year, and because my term is 2 years. And 2 years ago, I was probably one of 5 to 10 girls who were presidents. And this year, it's probably 5 to 10 boys. Mm. So there is that turnover. Mm-hmm. So you just can't guarantee it. You just can't. And,
I know in the Midwest, where I'm originally from, they have LSM, Lutheran Student Movement.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Is this equivalent to that, or is there an LSM here in the West or what?
I think there is. I've heard about it, yeah. Yeah, there is, but this is a cool one of it. It's just for the high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And LSM is for university.
Yeah.
College age, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, one way to encourage just like change on the synod level, on the congregational level, so they will be more welcome to change, is through a project called the Polycast Stewardship Project. And what it is it encourages. It encourages stewardship among elementary school children, and they send the money that they raise to Bangladesh, and they have a set curriculum, but it doesn't have to be, it can be for a year or 2 years or a month, and you order it separately, then you do the puppets. But it really worked very well for our church youth group. I happened to have 4 or 5 in my house because I had gotten them probably like a week before our vacation Bible school. And so our vacation Bible school is from ages 3 to 2nd grade. And those kids just loved it. They just wanted to, they actually yelled and screamed all day that they wanted to go to music and do, and it's in Cipelli, because it was just a really good experience. And they raised $75, and so they bought 4 water pumps for the people in Bangladesh and 15 trees. So the trees will help the floods, no, because of the soil. It will help the floodplain. And
what are these t-shirts?
Well, that's for vacation Bible school.
Oh.
Yeah, we have iron-on things that all the kids bring their white t-shirts. Yeah, it works pretty well. And
so you're having the youth group do the puppetry
and
stuff.
Yeah. Well, this was a couple of years ago. Let me see, this was 1 year ago. And it worked really well, I thought. And it was kind of nice to have 3 Pellies up there at the same time, because they converse among each other. And yeah. And so this worked very, very well. And I would encourage it for your small your church youth group, because not only does it break down the mindset of that you should give money to third world countries, but it also bridged the gap between the small children and then the older kids. So it's a very good project. And then so you can see how the need is there for the multicultural community and the differently abled community to infiltrate into the mainstream ELCA. And I think that Bishop Chilstrom, or I know that Bishop Chilstrom, is very optimistic towards that direction, because he does recognize that there is a problem with different social economic levels involvement and the people of color's involvement and the differently abled people's involvement, and he really does want to branch out and include them. But you know, he can't do it by himself. You know, he's just a bishop. Well, he's just a bishop, but he's only one person, and so he can't do everything. And actually, I think the best way is from the bottom up rather than from the top down, because the bureaucracy will come into effect if you do it from the top down. But I think if you wanted to attack a problem that really, really bothered you, you should talk to the people at the top first. Because then there will be quotas, but the best way to change is to go up this way.
So how do you then invite people of other color, other...
into your congregation?
Right.
Well, I know that we've tried very hard to. Well, I think... Yeah, and what we would have just like retreats that we would invite them to, and we'd give them like scholarships, like full rides, and we'd go to the ocean, or we go just camping or fishing or something like that. And we kind of really encouraged them to develop their youth group potential with us, and some of them stayed, some of them didn't.
How much say-so do they have over what happens? You know, I mean, as an African American, laying out on the beach means nothing to me.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So how much opportunity do they have to help with programs?
Well, I know that when our old youth pastor was there, he gave them a lot of say. A lot of say. In fact, he was the first one who encouraged me to go into like multicultural ministry. Mm-hmm. And I never thought of myself as any different than anyone else. Mm-hmm. I still really don't, because I don't look Asian. And so it kind of shocked me at first that, you know, I was different than everyone else. But I'm really glad that I have gone into it, because I learned so much, and I've tried to address problems that I think need to be solved. But I know that in most congregations that's not the case.
Do you know, you know, people of color? I mean, who are in leadership positions?
Positions?
Yeah.
You mean like in Maine?
Any of them.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I know a lot of people.
Uh-huh. So there are people of color, you know, throughout the system there.
Yeah.
But they can't manage to.
No.
They can't manage to get.
They still are a minority, definite minority, and so they
can't manage to affect programming or to get speakers or presenters. They can't manage to muster up enough strength to do that.
Again, it differs depending on the person. Because some people are just really charismatic, and they'll push and they'll push and they'll push, mm-hmm. and they'll get it. But sometimes they aren't as lucky, and they don't get it. And so, like, I met a pastor. She was the first woman pastor to be ordained. Her name was Asha George Geyser. And she is going to be the first Asian woman pastor to speak. No, the first just Asian to preach at the national... what is it called? Convocation in Kansas City, probably in a week.
Yeah, coming up in.
Yeah, coming up soon.
That's where I'm from. Well, I told you, I wanted to go to that, but I couldn't go.
Yeah, and so there are people, but you know, it's still kind of sad. If I think she was ordained like in 81, mm-hmm. and if that's the first Asian pastor they've had preach.
Well, are most of the speakers and presenters at this thing white male, mm-hmm. generally?
Mm-hmm. I know for a fact that we had a pastor who happened to be a woman, and she was like Scandinavian, like blonde hair, blue eyed, mm-hmm. and she was in a congregation, she had her own, I guess she shared a congregation with another pastor, and she became pregnant, and she got she had a husband, but she but she got a lot of heat because she was even pregnant, and you know, she's probably like early 30s, late 20s, well, she's like early 30s, and what's wrong about being pregnant and being a woman pastor? Isn't it natural to be pregnant if you're like a woman? Not really natural, but that's what happens. I mean, so there is that too, and she is white, blonde hair, blue eyes, Scandinavian pastor, but yet she still gets a lot of, well, she did get a lot of heat because of it, and I just don't really see why. And so I know.
Used to it.
What?
People just aren't used to it.
Yeah.
Something new and different. How is she going to handle it? We're going to have to give her time off.
No, it wasn't like that.
Oh, really?
It was like, she's a pastor.
She's not supposed to get pregnant.
She's pregnant.
That's true.
Yeah, they don't think they're
pregnant.
Yeah,
because you think of like the pastor as a man, and she has a wife who's very congenial, and they have children. A traditional family. So you know, and so you're just not used to like the woman being a pastor and having it bring the children. And so I know that at the synod level, at our last synod convention, we wanted her to give the keynote sermon at our thing, and she was 8 months pregnant, but we thought she can't do it.
Why not?
Well, she was actually like 8 months and
8.5 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And so we did, and it was probably like a 5 or 6 hour drive in the snow and the ice.
No.
And we thought,
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. And so like, I think the next weekend or like that week she had the baby. So it was a good thing she didn't, I think. And plus it might have given her so much emotional trauma. You know, just to like go up there and...
The water would have broke up there. So what's wrong with that?
So I think it would have been an excellent opportunity for a lot of girls to see and a lot of guys to see that, here's a pregnant pastor. She's up there and she can still function. And I know that a lot of girls do want to become pastors, but they don't feel like they can because of the stereotype of that. And that's too bad, too. I mean, I want to become a pastor, but I think I won't. I'll definitely encourage all girls to become pastors if they want to. Because I know that the person who was the minority outreach rep before me on the board, she is now going to become a pastor. Well, she wants to become a pastor. She wants to go to seminary. And for the longest time, she struggled because she knew that she could always do it, and she knew that she shouldn't want to listen to everyone else. But yet there was like an inner struggle that, no, I can't do it. I can't become a pastor.
That's really too bad.
I think men go through that inner struggle too much.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I think that's just universal.
That's true. But I think it could be more for girls, though. It could be more. So, that's just... So, you see, there's a lot of things that need to be changed. A lot of things. And the only way you're going to change it is from your own congregation and youth group. And this model of the baseball system doesn't necessarily have to work for your small, for your youth group, but it is a very good model to go by, and you can alter it. And there are a lot of opportunities out there. Like I said, there's a lot of scholarship money. Actually, there's probably even more on the regional level. Because I know at the last convention, see, we have our conventions and they're not supposed to make a lot of profit, but there's still supposed to be some profit because that's our budgets for the next 2 years. And they, at the last regional convention held in Spokane, they made way too much money. And they didn't even try to, but they just had like more people than they had budgeted for. So then I think they're like, no, I wouldn't even guess how much money they made, but I know that we got a lot of extra money coming from the region into our synod because of it. So there are scholarships out there and it really should be used. Because they're just kind of like getting thrown back into the pile and just disappearing to little cubby holes where nobody knows they went. For the PolyCam project, I know in Region 1, that's Alaska, Washington, Idaho, Montana, and Oregon. There's Pelleys in the Synod office, and you can borrow them. All you just do is just like write to them, and they have videos, and they have a curriculum that you can just like use for a while until you get your own, or you know, like your own project or curriculum, because not a lot of people know about this, and I think it needs to be shared. And I was actually the regional and resource person for it, and so I got a few calls, but not as many as I would have liked. Well, Pelican.
I don't understand the Pelican thing. What's the purpose of it?
Okay.
What does it do?
What it does is it encourages stewardship in the elementary school children age, because a lot of youth like to hear the word stewardship.
So that's what the puppets do?
Yeah.
Is to encourage stewardship.
Yeah, they can talk about, oh, I'm from Bangladesh.
Oh, okay.
I just flew over here. I'm really tired because of all the rain over there and all the poor conditions. And I saw a terrible situation when I saw a young girl dying, you know, stuff like that.
Okay.
So, do you have any ideas on how you can use this for your own congregation? How you have to change it or bring it back?
I had to do confirmation here at the village, and that would have worked. I wished I'd had that book, because mm-hmm. it wasn't a big group. There was only two or three people.
Well, still, you know, just because your group is smaller doesn't mean it's not going to work.
But you said you need 7 to 9 people?
No, well, that's just a recommended.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't put more than 8 in a group.
Okay.
But anything less, actually, probably 3 to 5, I think, would probably be the best number. 3 to 5 or 6. So, if you don't have any more questions or comments, that's it.
So your congregation is in the Midwest now?
No, I'm here. I've been here for 3 years. I've been in here holding for 3 years.
Yeah.
So I don't have a congregation once I leave here. And I leave here in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to probably go to the Seattle area mm-hmm. and be there. Mm-hmm. So.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
And you can buy this book over at the bookstore. Yeah, it's very, very good. It's not really pretty inside.
Yeah, it's like sitting in the front.
I kind of opened it up and I was like, oh no. This is to encourage youth to go. But
they don't need to see the book, you can write it on the board.
Oh yeah, you can just Xerox it off or put it on overhead.
Right.
Whatever you want. Yeah.
I've spoken at 3 of the, you know, the May Youth weekends
mm-hmm.
they do here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ever since I've been here, I've spoken at them. And I've asked people, you know, if they wanted me to speak at anything else to let me know. No one's ever said anything
wrong. Well, I think you're an excellent speaker.
And it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
When I look at this, I think, you know, they say they want people of color to speak at these things, but yeah. No one's
mm-hmm.
ever asked me to speak at any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of...
Well, I can give your name because we're looking for a speaker right now. Actually, we have a list,
mm-hmm.
but they're all kind of white.
That's interesting.
So.
Well, yeah, you can put my name. I'd be willing.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, it'd be in 94. Thanksgiving.
Well, I hope I'm still around in
my age. Yeah. Well, wait, I think put down BuzzCon. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah,
and then Mike Iaconelli. And then a couple other people, like the PLU Youth Campus person.
Susan Brill.
Susan Brill, that's it,
yeah.
Susan Brill.
Yeah.
And we're going to contact those three. And then see, I'm sure that like at least one of you can do it. But like I said, I would like to have people like from different backgrounds because I think one of these conventions and it's just they have a really good time. But I think you also learn stuff too.
Well, I know what they're like because I used to go to them. Everything's white and most of when we used to go. We used to just get bullet witches.
We'd
go off and do our own thing.
And
the whites would be having fun all over the place.
Yeah.
It's not like we didn't have fun,
right.
but there were some that we didn't even really want to interact with.
Yeah.
I know what those convention things are like, but it would have done me a world of good when I was a teenager if somebody, African American, would have been one of the keynote speakers, one of the presenters, that sort of thing. So,
Well, what are the kinds of things that African American kids like to do? We don't have that many in our area, but down
in
the Quad Cities.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a teen anymore. I mean, it would be different. You know, even music.
Yeah.
I remember going to these things, and the music was all white. And if we put on some black music,
mm-hmm.
people would moan and groan. They wouldn't
mm-hmm.
dance. They'd leave.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to put white music on to get the party going again. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and music is very important. you know, mm-hmm. when you're a teen. And they wouldn't put that, we didn't have any of our own music. Mm-hmm. If we wanted our own music, we had to play it in our rooms amongst yes. ourselves, you know.
You mean for the dances?
For the dances, for
the main sessions?
For the dances, for the any kind of presentation, mm-hmm. all came from a white perspective, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, now the dances have changed. Actually, the people don't really like white music anymore. They like black music.
Yeah.
Well, sort of speak like rap.
Yeah.
But
that's changed somewhat, but I still hear when we do dances here, it's got to be crossover music.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be that kind of music. And I know we had a group of young African American. Actually, it was a mixture of kids from the inner city of Portland, and they came here and they wanted to play their music mm-hmm. at one of our dances. So we said okay, and we let them play. And when their music was up and they were dancing, all the whites were sitting there. Mm-hmm. Then we put on, you know, music that whites left, which is generally crossover stuff, and then all the whites would get up and, mm-hmm. and dance. And it was just kind of a, you know, it's like you can play rap music, but you can't play rap music that's too far into the black community.
Yeah, like Public Enemy.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of stuff, or you can't, you know, I'm not.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
I'm not complaining. Let me
Well, yeah.
It's okay. But I'm just saying that's just the way it was. That when we used to go to these things, there was nothing there for us. There was nothing there that said you're welcome. Mm-hmm. What you have to contribute is of value. Every now and then we were on the spot, mm-hmm. you know, and they'd say, well, you're black. What do you think about racism? You know, but generally, you know.
I don't think they meant it in a bad way.
Yeah.
Well, no, they didn't. They didn't. But you know, to make people feel welcome and part of something, you got to have people of color and you got to have women in the leadership.
Well, I went to the council student and youth presidents this last year, and there were some people there from the Caribbean islands, mm-hmm. and they did not speak, well, they spoke very good English, mm-hmm. but it wasn't their first language. Mm-hmm. And so one night we had a talent show in our small groups, and they one group did a group on the Coneheads, mm-hmm. and they shunned some people because they looked different and they just talked different, and the people from Puerto Rico took it the wrong way. Puerto Rico. And so this one girl, she went up there, she bawled her eyes out. She said, I hate America, I'm never coming back here again, I'm going to badmouth it when I go back to my country. It's terrible because of that Conehead skit. And she didn't know that it was supposed to be funny. She thought that it was sending a message that you shun people who are different than you, who don't speak your language as a first language. And it was really bad because she got, you know, there was a lot of people who were from very, very white families. Very white. And so they were honestly like, they were upset, they were crying, they were screaming and yelling, they were just... And I was sitting there and I was going, they made a mistake. We're sorry. We're all sorry, and we didn't know they would offend you. But I didn't think it needed the kind of reaction it got.